broadcasting around the world, covering all aspects of business and finance and how it affects you. This is Boom Bust. I'm Christy I, filling in for Bart in Washington, D.C. We're glad you're on board. Coming up, the Trump administration is targeting Iran yet again, this time setting its crosshairs on countries using Iranian oil. Hillary Fordwich, a Strelmark, drills into the headlines to see just how this move affects other nations. Plus, Huawei is managing to soar despite constant pressure from the United States. RT's Alex Mihailovich logs on to break down Huawei's path from relative obscurity to a household name. And finally, blockchain is making major moves again with legacy institutions. Jeffrey Tucker of the American Institute for Economic Research lends us a hand to break down all the latest blockchain news. All of that directly ahead, but first, we hit some headlines. Let's go. A tightening of the screws on Iran leads our global report today as U.S. President Donald Trump puts an end to exemptions for sanctions against the oil's nation. Previously, eight countries, China, Greece, India, Italy, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and Turkey, were granted waivers regarding the U.S. sanctions against Iran's energy sector. Now, the White House has announced that President Trump will not reissue those waivers, effectively making those nations subject to sanctions under U.S. laws as of May 2nd. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders said, "This decision is intended to bring Iran's oil exports to zero." U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo claimed that Iran's regional rivals, Saudi Arabia and the UAE, are working with the U.S. to boost oil outputs, which would offset the loss. For more, we're joined by Hillary Fordwich, CEO of Strelmark. So glad to have you here, Hillary.
Great, Chrissy, welcome.
So right now, by not reissuing these SREs when they expire, President Trump is effectively trying to bring Iran's oil exports down to zero. And denying this regime's principal source of revenue, he's trying to bring them back to the negotiating table. Tell us exactly what is the U.S. trying to achieve by doing this?
Well, by trying to do this, I would give the analogy, Chrissy, it's kind of like having the new principal in town. You've had a nefarious, naughty student who has been bullying and terrorizing all the other students, actually for decades. If you look at it, no American administration and no one has really put their foot down with Iran. And what this is doing, and by the way, don't forget these SREs, they have to be renewed basically every 6 months. So all this is doing is putting a foot down. What does it mean? It means that this student, this naughty student in the class, should now have to comply and become part of the global community. And that's what this is about. It's trying to get the Iranians to comply.
So events right now are moving in a very confrontational direction.
Correct.
And Iran may shut down the Strait of Hormuz as a retaliation. And that would be the world's most busiest transit lane for seaborne shipments for oil. Right now, it's responsible for handling 30% of the world's oil exports daily, and shutting this down could be disastrous. Could something like this happen if events were to escalate?
Well, certainly this maybe could happen, but just remember this. You know, the Iranian regime, they may be nefarious, but they may certainly not be stupid, and they're not. And they're not, as a nation, they're certainly not suicidal. So what would this mean? Yes, you mentioned 35% of the world's crude oil goes through the Strait of Hormuz. That's something like 17 million barrels a day, a huge amount of oil. Now, all different nations would be affected, and they know that they are now desperate for their few allies they have in the world. They're not going to impact all these other nations. So really, this is brinksmanship, and this is blustering on their part. What are they supposed to say? Of course they're going to say this. But again, they don't want this to escalate. They also know, should this lead to a military confrontation, they know the U.S. has overwhelming power, and they know this would just be ludicrous and suicidal as a nation. The regime there does not want to undertake a battle with the United States.
If not a battle, what would the alternative be? What moves do they have now?
Well, they need to comply. And the demands, some people have said that these demands are ludicrous, but go to the global community. What does the global community want? The global community does not want terrorism. The global community does not want this, again, sort of like naughty student. And I think what it is, we've got a new principal in town, and the rules are being strengthened. And I think that the expectations of the U.S. administration are not in any way absurd. I think they're actually quite reasonable. And I think the most nations in the world know that.
So those naughty students is essentially just trying to toe the line to see how much they can get away with right now.
Well, yeah, and they've been bullying and terrorizing the world for years, and no one has actually had either the guts or the confidence or the bravado to stand up to them. And this is what's happening now. And I think, don't forget, the financial pressure and these sanctions are going to really crush the regime, and they won't want to have their nation penalized any further.
Yes, well, unfortunately, there are other countries that are affected by this. Countries such as China and India, who
Correct.
Are some of Iran's biggest clients for these oil exports. So how are they reacting?
Well, don't forget, they're allies. So in this situation, Iran is even more desperate to have their allies comply. So what do they need? They want their allies to get on board. What I would suggest is, if we go back to the kind of the student analogy, what we need those allies to do, we need those allies to pressure Iran and say, look, we're your ally. Comply, you know, and actually, which nation wants? And if you look at the very sad events over this recent weekend, the terrorism of religious sites, look at the impact that's had. The global community does tend to rally when it comes to a global bully. And what Iran really wants, what they want to become, is they want to become part of the global community. What do you need to do to become part of the global community? Comply with the demands of this administration and stop the terrorism and stop the halting of funding of such terrorist groups like Hezbollah, etc.
Yes, and now finally, we have like a really interesting report out from Halliburton saying that they expect Yes. international offshore drilling this year to rise, double the estimates of Schlumberger, to rise by 14% actually. So right now, I think U.S. is trying to reduce its dependency on foreign exports, but we're currently importing about a little less than 10 million barrels of oil Mm-hmm. a day. So is there actually a dent being made by the offshore drilling?
Well, there'll always be a dent, yes, absolutely. I would say, think about it again, it's not just the offshore drilling. There's offshore drilling, but also there's an immense amount of fracking going off on throughout the Dakotas in the U.S. ANWR has not yet opened up, but when that does, there'll be even more oil. What we've done is we've made sure that there is that extra production, and we don't forget we have extensive reserves. And my last comment is, look, Chrissy, no incumbent wants the price of oil to increase. The average person, and including me, you, everybody, all of us, we all know what the price of gas is at the pump. Why do we know? Because it's something that touches our daily lives. So this administration is not going to want the price of oil to soar, let alone increase. I predict there will be short-term pain. I think Americans will feel this in the short term. In the long run, to answer your question specifically, offshore drilling will offset it in addition to all the fracking and all the other production in the United States.
Hopefully we see today oil is at an all-time high. So we definitely are feeling
Correct.
The pain. Hillary Fordwich, the CEO of Strelmark, thank you so much for your insight.
Pleasure, Chrissy.
A presidential phone call to Libya is moving oil markets. Last week, U.S. President Donald Trump effectively reversed U.S. policy with a friendly phone call to Libya warlord Khalifa Haftar, who is the head of self-designated Libyan National Army and is currently threatening to take control of Tripoli by force. The phone call reportedly happened last Monday, but was not publicized until a White House statement on Friday. The White House statement praised Mr. Haftar and alluded to a shared vision for Libya's future. Sharing a vision for Libya with Khalifa, who reportedly was sponsored by the past by the CIA, would be a break from U.S. policy of working with the United Nations to stabilize the so-called Government of National Accord, which is now under attack by Mr. Haftar's forces. The Prime Minister of the GNA warned in an email to the Wall Street Journal, oil prices usually rise if wars or unrest occur in oil exporting countries. Despite criticism from the U.S., and some of its top allies, Chinese telecom giant Huawei is posting impressive gains in revenues. Allegations of spying only seem to have pushed the company to higher international profile and brought more of the attention to much-touted changeover to 5G. RT's Alex Mihailovich joins us for more. Hi, Alex.
Hello there.
So we got a lot to get through today. So Huawei's Huawei's Q1 earnings report came in and things are looking really good for the company. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Huawei's performing really, really well, almost 40% up year after year. That translates to about $27 billion, profit margin of 8%, a little bit better than last year. So we're seeing definitely that Huawei is moving in the pluses. Look, when you compare it to other companies that are also focused on smartphones as a part of their bigger scheme of things, Huawei's really kicking butt. There's no other way to put it. Samsung, for example, we talked about that just a few weeks ago. Samsung Samsung is not performing very well. They've sort of stagnated with sales numbers, and their numbers are not really showing anything that is of interest to investors, especially. Huawei is the leader. Even companies like Apple, hey, I got an iPhone, but it looks like I'm behind, because Apple right now, by the end of this year, by 2020, we should see Huawei surpassing Samsung. And already, when it comes to Apple, Huawei is selling more phones. So Huawei's doing well when you look at the business side of things, that's for sure.
So the CIA actually alleged that Huawei has received funding from China's state security apparatus and falling in line with previous allegations of spying by the company. So how has Huawei been able to fight off all of these accusations from the U.S. government and friends?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, it's been a sort of a relentless campaign by the U.S. They even put on a roadshow where they went around Europe and to other countries saying, hey, get off of Huawei, you know, they're spying on you. But these are all allegations. And here's, you know, when you break it down, what the CIA is saying, and this is intelligence that they shared with Britain, they're basically saying that Huawei has taken money from the People's Liberation Army, that's the Chinese army, the China's National Security Commission, and a third branch of the Chinese State Intelligence Network. So what? You know, the United States has tried to work with Google and Amazon. We know that Amazon's on board with working the U.S. military. So countries do that. Why are you going to stop buying or stop using Amazon or Google because the American government or the American military works with them? Are other countries trying to boycott Google or Amazon because of that? No. This is just the way it works. Huawei happens to be in China, happens to be a company that's going to work with the Chinese government as well. There's really nothing there that is so diabolical or something that we should really be afraid of. You also have to look at the fact that, like I said, these are allegations. We're not working with anything really that's proofy. You know, like the U.S. government hasn't come out and said, hey, here's proof of what's going on. We've only heard them saying that you got to watch out. You got to watch out there. They could be spying. And now with this 5G technology rolling out, you know that they're adamant about kind of shutting down this company. Is this a part of the trade war with China? It could all be a part of that bigger equation. But U.S. is really actively looking to kind of close things down. And we have a map here. It's going to give you an idea of exactly what this looks like in countries that have banned Huawei. So far, it's the U.S., it's Australia, and countries such as that, Japan. Japan, I mean, it's a big one there. Because Japan, obviously, Japan, when it comes to tech, they want to keep it in there. Interest. It's a tech nation. So other countries are mulling it over, like Canada and New Zealand. But so far, not too many people have joined the bandwagon, or I should say, not too many countries.
Fascinating. Thank you so much for your insight, as always, RT correspondent Alex Mihailovich. Thank you.
Thank you.
Time now for a quick break, but hang here, because when we return, blockchain is making major moves with legacy institutions. Jeffrey Tucker of the American Institute for Economic Research lends us a hand to break down all the latest blockchain news. And as we go to break, here are the numbers at the close.
After the previous stage of my career was over, everyone wondered what I was going to do next. They talked about different clubs. On one hand, it is logical to stay on your home field, where everything is familiar. On the other, I wanted a new challenge and a fresh perspective. I'm used to surprising people, and I thought, why not give it a go? I'm going to talk about football on RT. What else did you think I was going to do? By the way, where is the touchline here?
When all truths seem wrong, when all rules just don't hold, and a new world is yet to shape out, disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
The housing crisis was a result of securitizing mortgages that were resold dozens of times, and then, like Goldman Sachs, was betting against their own clients, and they were engaged in massive fraud, again, bailed out by Timothy Geithner and his friends. And now the echo of that controlled demolition of the housing market is that all the housing is concentrated in a few hands like Blackstone as a gift from their friends at the central banks, and the result is medievalism.
In a world of fake partisan news, lies, and conspiracy,
it's time to wake up, to dig deeper, to hit the stories that mainstream media refuses to tell. More than ever, we need to be smarter. We need to stop slamming the door on the facts and shouting past each other. It's time for critical thinking. It's time to fight for the middle, for the truth. The time is now for watching closer, for watching the Hawks.
Facebook and Google started with a great idea and great ideals. Unfortunately, there was also a very dark side. They are constructing a profile of you, and that profile is real, it's detailed, and it never goes away.
Turns out that Google is manipulating your opinions from the very first character that you type into the search bar. It will always favor one dog food over another, one comparative shopping service over another, and one candidate over another.
They can suppress certain types of results based on what they think you should be seeing.
If they have this kind of power, then democracy is an illusion. The free and fair election doesn't exist. The more rope we give them, the sooner we are all hanged.
Welcome back. The Kraft Heinz Company has named a new chief executive officer in hopes of turning the page on recent troubles. In February, the company disclosed that investigators from the SEC had opened an investigation into accounting practices at Kraft Heinz while slashing its dividends by 36%. Now, in the wake of those and other setbacks, current CEO Bernardo Hees will vacate the top job and be replaced by former Anheuser-Busch InBev marketing director Miguel Patricio. Shares of Kraft Heinz rose in early morning trading on the news, but the company would have to rebound 20% to reverse its decline in the first months of 2019. India's second largest airline, Jet Airways, has suspended operations, and workers, passengers, and other stakeholders are scrambling to deal with the consequences. Jet, which says the shutdown was temporary, was compelled to take drastic steps last week due to liquidity problems. The company is now reportedly under the control of a group of investors led by the State Bank of India. The vice president of National Aviators Guild told the Economic Times of India's workers are ready to be flexible on wage demands in order to help any new investors or owners to get the company back off the ground. An activist has filed suit seeking to ensure that passengers who have purchased tickets on more than 1,000 suspended flights are either given refunds or allowed to reschedule. There are more details on the Peruvian angle of the sprawling international scandal around the Brazilian construction firm Odebrecht in the wake of the suicide of former President Alan Garcia. The two-time former president shot himself in his home last week as police waited to arrest him on charges of receiving corrupt payments from Odebrecht officials. Now, Peruvian prosecutors are describing a corrupt network they say took root in Mr. Garcia's second presidential administration and received millions of dollars worth of kickbacks. The allegations of dirty dealings are detailed in a new 44-page order for the Garcia arrest, which places a top Garcia aide and his transportation minister near the top of the scheme. Bitcoin is holding steady around the $5,300 level from its run-up earlier this month. The total market cap of the crypto industry is back to around $180 billion, with Bitcoin making up 52% of it. Trading between $51 and $5,300, there's no clear breakout yet. Last time we checked in, Bitcoin has just broken the 50, the 100, and the 200-day moving average. very key technical levels. We are hoping to see Bitcoin form a golden cross, where you see the short-term 50 cross over the 200, signaling a bull rally. If Bitcoin can hold this 5200 for another week, we could see that. The last time we saw the golden triangle was in October 2015, and that started the bull rally where we saw Bitcoin gain more than 6,700%. We're seeing some very good momentum here and gains are holding. We aren't even coming down to retest the 200 day, so we're getting some very good short-term confidence and short-term risk-taking. The volume isn't too substantial, but it's rising and rising at higher prices. It looks like we can hit 6,000 soon, but I would be cautious here. Previous support becomes new resistance, and 6,000 was a huge level of support, years worth of support. This will be difficult to break, and I anticipate an initial rejection and a pullback before we try again. Here to help us take a closer look at the markets is Jeffrey Tucker, Editorial Director of the American Institute of Economic Research. Hi, Jeff.
Nice to see you.
So, Jeff, we're seeing Bitcoin lead the entire market higher, but increasingly we're also starting to see a decoupling within the top 20 coins. This is very unlike last year, where they're becoming less and less correlated with Bitcoin. What's driving that?
Well, what's driving it is decentralization of the crypto markets. A big problem with Bitcoin, what's also called BTC, is that it's actually not a very usable token right now. It's very expensive and very slow. Incredibly, that problem has not been solved, even though it's now, you know, the problem has been known about for 4 years. So you're seeing these other assets come in and outperform Bitcoin just in terms of speed and ease of use and expense. And I think this is inevitable in the crypto market as long as the BTC is not going to adapt. In other words, technologies that to fix this stuff, but they're still in the experimental stage. So if you look at the market cap of the industry in general, it's up like 250% from its lows in December. BTC itself is up about 62%, which actually compares to the Dow Jones Industrial Average of 23% since its December lows. But what's funny to me, and it's actually kind of funny for a person like me who follows the markets very carefully, Bitcoin and crypto in general still suffers on a kind of a, I would call it like a psychological debilitating state, or everybody is comparing the current price to the highs, which were a fluke. And so even now, I think the Wall Street Journal ran a headline a couple of days ago that said something like, the bleeding and the carnage in the crypto industry continues. I'm looking at that thinking, well, where's the evidence of that? It's actually not true. But it's because the crypto markets peaked out, you know, in December a year ago, and continues to be the top. Briefly, it touched $20,000, and people are still suffering under this delusion that it should actually be that. So, it seems to be a pretty decent opportunity to move into the markets, at least. From the way I'm observing it, I think you're right. We've consolidated a lot of gains over the last several months, and we might be prepared for something like a bull run again. Can't say for sure, of course.
Yeah, and you're right. People always used to compare Apple and Amazon, Microsoft to the highs back in the early days, and it's taken them almost a decade to actually surpass their higher highs.
Yeah, that's right. And so even now, it's funny to me because I've been writing about this since about 2013. It does get frustrating because you look at the obituaries for this asset, and they keep pouring in. You know, like every day, people are like, "Oh, it didn't work. It's terrible." Well, you know, I think you look more objectively, what you see is a conventional trading patterns that you're going to see in any kind of like dramatically emerging technology, same as the dot-coms in the late 90s and the early 2000s. It's following the same exact pattern. I don't think there's any reason to panic about it. I mean, obviously, the technology is not only brilliant, but it's very much needed in today's world, where all of our remittances technology and interbank transfers are stuck in like the 80s and 90s level technology. We're in a desperate need for something big to happen, and I think probably blockchain technology is that very thing.
So speaking of, we've seen a very harsh battle. We've seen a very big battle between Bitcoin Cash ABC and Bitcoin Cash SV. And this used to be a hash war, now turned into an exchange delisting war. And it has gotten very nasty. So give us the latest details of how this affects the industry.
Well, thank you for asking that question, which sounds a little obscure to people. But what happens, the Bitcoin Cash was a fork of Bitcoin Core. And then, of course, BCH then forked again with another theory of the size of the way the block should be sized. And it was a kind of a different perspective. Everybody claims to be carrying on the genuine vision of Satoshi. But that was a bloody battle between what is now called BSV and BCH. And it was kind of painful to watch. On the other hand, forks are just part of the industry, it's part of the market process rolling itself out. There was a lot of carnage that resulted from that thing, but I think as you look back at it, the market sector has separated itself out very well. But the people who love gigantic blocks are all rallying around BSV, and that's fine if that's your perspective. And the people who want more of a careful sort of rollout of a block size to keep up with transaction volume, they're rallying around BCH. The people who believe in just holding that old-fashioned thing called Bitcoin Core, they're the HODL crowd, and they're in with that. And if you're interested in this and you join Twitter, your feed can fill up all day with people just hating on each other. It's good old-fashioned blood sport out there in crypto land, and it's very exciting, actually.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been a very interesting battle to watch to see who delists who. SBI actually just delisted ABC in favor for SV, so yeah. That was a very unexpected move by from their part.
Yep. That's right. And depending on which exchange you use, you're gonna rally around that exchange. On the other hand, the really hardcore people say, forget the exchanges, you should just hold your wallets.
Yeah. Jeffrey Tucker, the editorial director at the American Institute for Economic Research. Thank you so much for joining.
Pleasure.
That's it for this time. You can catch Boom Bust on DirecTV, channel 321, Dish Network, channel 280, or streaming 24/7 on Pluto TV, the free TV app, channel 132. Or as always, hit us up at youtube.com/boombustrt. See y'all next time.